everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who does not take it real seriously, but seriously enough that he bought a little arm for his mic.
Yeah, a year ago. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
A year ago. Yeah. Yeah. And such a pro. You never said it. Such a pro.
No. Such a pro. No. Let the audience discover it for themselves. You know, you don't want to, you don't broadcast. You just put everything out there and let them come to the conclusion.
Yeah, yeah. They're peeling back the layers of this show and exactly. The professionalism of this show, for sure.
Yep.
Hey, you're going to be able to buy yourself a whole lot of microphone arms now that you've won the Powerball, I assume.
Yeah, so.
How'd that go?
It wasn't me, it turns out. I know, no. Right? I thought it was me. I thought.
You sounded so sure.
But no, it turns out I had actually watched the broadcast and bought the same numbers the next day.
Okay.
Thinking I could maybe, trick somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the ticket actually says which day the drawing is for.
Okay, now could you scratch that out and write a different day in there?
I did it. But there was like some sort of barcode on the back. When they scanned that, they said, oh no, sir, you're not, this isn't you.
They're crafty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've thought of a lot of things.
They've thought of everything I could think of.
They thought of the one thing.
Gee, there was this, I don't know where I heard this recently. I don't think it's like necessarily a news story, but there was a guy who worked for, he created the software or ran the software for a lottery company. I think it was like a scratch-offs. Mm-hmm. And he was responsible for the algorithm, randomizing the algorithm to make sure just like the numbers are random. And then over time, people were like, you sure have a nice house for someone who does this kind of small job. And you have this nice new car. And it turned out that he had been giving himself improved enough odds to win. So he didn't like know the numbers, but it was like, if I play, I'll probably win something. He did it like 1,000 times.
Wow.
And he had all this money and no one caught on to it for a long time. I think it was Jake Tapper who wrote a book about this actually. Hmm. And then the case was dead. They went to court for a long time where they could only had circumstantial evidence. And then someone called and was like, his brother in Texas also has a really big house. And so they pulled that thread and they're like, oh, it all came together. And, yeah, it's great. Anyway, you can do that.
You could. The secret there, don't play the numbers yourself. You got to feed them. No. You got to feed them. You got to feed them to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Take 10% of the profit.
Yeah.
Do that forever.
Yeah. Or, the best case scenario is if you make a friend, but somehow, and you can't say it directly, but somehow when you start the friendship, make it clear that if they ever benefit in any way at all financially, they should give some of that to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard thing to do. But if you can start every relationship that way, then you can start funneling those people winning lottery tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll just be like, I just won $1 million. You didn't ask for this, but here's $100,000.
Mm.
Right? And they'll do that 19 times. And then they go to jail. And you're like, I don't know. It's so crazy. They just gave me this money. I didn't ask for it. Is that interesting? So interesting. That's what I would do anyway.
I'd have to imagine if you work at the lottery company, like once every 5 years, they just go through and they find the 5 fanciest cars in the parking lot and just arrest those people.
Yep. That one. Yeah. Okay. All right. Intern's getting a promotion. Well, that's good. I'm sorry you didn't win Powerball, but it's probably bad. You want to stay grounded. I don't think you would stay very grounded.
Exactly. Exactly.
You won that if you got rich.
I know I told you I would continue doing the podcast, but I'll be honest. I probably wouldn't continue doing the podcast.
I know. We all knew that you weren't going to keep doing the podcast.
Read between the lines there.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty clear. You wouldn't have brought it up otherwise.
Mm. Yeah. I am really impressed that you thought I won Powerball and the first thing I bought was this microphone arm, though. That's very impressive.
I thought, you're thrifty, you're a needs-based person. I can only see the basement part of your house. I don't know how much of you've already added to the upstairs.
Maybe
you've gone vertically.
We've actually gone down. That's the thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't want the neighbors to know what's going on, so we've just been going straight down.
You just demolished the top and you're going to start from the ground level and go down? Or you're just
correct.
You're leaving it as it is?
It's,
digging through the basement?
Yeah. It looks like an evil lair. That's what I'm going for. Okay. I'm going for lair.
That's cool.
It's really nice. They don't tell you this whenever in property law school or whatever. But once you go down far enough, you can go out and nobody knows or cares.
I wonder how far down you'd have to go before you could start going out and it would be fine.
50 feet.
That's how 50? Yep.
No, I know it's 50.
You know it's 50? No one does anything more than 50 feet?
Exactly. They can't see it. They can't see it.
Okay.
So down more than 50, and then you can go out as far as you'd like.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Someone's probably already done that.
Mark
Zuckerberg probably.
The oil and gas industry has done it for a while. Yes.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
But on a residential scale, no, I feel like a pioneer. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. You could drink your neighbor's milkshake, residentially speaking.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Did you ever read the story about the guy who, I'm gonna try and get as many of the details right here. It sounds horrifying, and so you're gonna be like, this, you don't have the details right. And unfortunately, I think I have the bad details correct. Somebody hired someone at like slave labor wages to dig underneath of the slab of their home in their basement and create an elaborate like cave bunker system underneath of the slab of their home. Until eventually there was a fire in the basement and the person could not escape and died.
Oh no.
Yeah. But it was like this went on for months and maybe even years of somebody just every day digging like a, you know, like you were tunneling out of jail below the slab of somebody's home at their request.
And the tunneler is the one who died in the fire?
The tunneler eventually died. Yes.
Why did he bring flammable things down there?
Is something in the basement caught fire and it started to suffocate him out. So when he tried to flee, then he got caught up in all the fire and the smoke in the basement and expired.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you
that's
thought
hard
your job
to explain
was,
to the police.
Yeah. And who is this gentleman down here behind the litter box? Oh no, that's Benicio. He's hard to explain. I'll be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? Let's not talk about him.
Yeah.
let's just go on with our days. Trust me. The amount of paperwork you'll need to do if I tell you this story, you don't want that.
Can you help me scooch him back into the hole, though? I'd be really, really appreciate it. His mom does not know he's here.
Oh, man. That's fun. That's a fun story. That's a fun New Year's story. It's New Year's. It's our first episode of the new year.
Oh, it is.
2026. We're back.
Oof.
Some would say better than ever.
I'm going to start writing 2026 on my checks now.
It's the worst. It's the worst. All those that one check I write a year, I'm like, what fucking year is it? I asked some people on our social media what their favorite episode of 2025 was.
Oh.
Just to see, like, you know, what people like to get
see which direction we need to be going in the
That's
new
right.
year. Yeah.
And I thought, so I got some really good answers. I'll share some with you if you want, but I wanted to ask you a question, but I don't want to ask you what your favorite episode of 2025 was. I want to ask you, can you name one episode that we did in 2025, not in December?
Not in December?
Uh-huh.
What about the cannibals in the cave? That was a good one.
The cannibal that has got to be 2024.
No, that was 2025.
I don't think so.
I
don't think so.
Has to be.
Now I'm gonna have to look it up. What was that guy's name?
Oh, now we don't know what happened in 2025.
Sonny Bean.
Damn it.
Sonny Bean. When did we do Sonny Bean? Let's see. I hate that when I Google, is this a ghost, Sonny Bean? Our podcast doesn't come up.
Our SEO is
that's not what
awesome.
You want.
Mm-mm.
No, we should rename the podcast something that's better. I'm gonna find you fill some time. I'm gonna look for
this. Let me think of a second one. I think of a second one just in case
I'm
the
pretty
first
sure
one
Sonny
falls
Dean
through.
Was 2024. That can't possibly have been 2025.
The one where like where the girl was like living up in Minnesota because she thought her husband or her fiance had died on a boat. And so she moved there. And then the husband or the fiance came back on the boat. And then the new husband.
Iowa, Nebraska border.
Right. Yeah. There. Yeah, upper Midwest.
Sure.
And then he like, and then he jumped off the cliff with the girl.
Okay.
I don't have.
You got one.
I don't know.
You got one. Would you like to know the date?
Were any of their names?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. Would you like to know the date that we published The Ghost of Sonny Bean?
In 2025, right?
May 22nd, 2024.
Oof, that's a while.
Pretty early in 2024, actually.
That's a while. It was a good one, though. I liked that one.
It was a good one. That was a good one. That's good. You did. Okay, you got one. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Say, a lot of people liked our Steed Bonnet episode last year.
Who?
That's right. The pirate crew.
Oh, yeah.
Blackbeard Pirate. That was a good one. What else do people say? Let's see here. There's a lot of these I put a lot of work into that people don't seem to care about. And that really hurts my feelings. The chicken, the headless, the chicken of Sir Francis Bacon, Sir Francis Bacon's chicken ghost.
Hmm.
Your face looks like you've never heard this before. I can't believe you don't remember that one. That was a great one.
Hmm.
It's
ringing a lot of bells.
That was definitely this year, right? Chicken. Yeah, Sir Francis Bacon's chicken.
Uh-huh.
March 12th, 2025. Okay.
Sounds great.
And someone loved our Graham Parsons episode the most.
Oh, I do remember the Graham Parsons episode.
Rest in peace, Graham Parsons. That was a wild story. Anyway, we're looking forward to doing some more fun stuff in 2026. Our 200th episode is coming up not too far down the road.
Yeah.
Got to figure out what to do for that. I got some ideas. What else? Anything else? Oh, last thing we should talk about before we get into the show. Did you catch up on the Avengers teasers?
I did.
Your thoughts?
I will have you know that my teaser will be debuted next week.
And which teaser is your teaser?
It'll be airing before the latest Sydney Sweeney comedy. It's the only area we could get to do the trailer.
Okay. And you're teasing what exactly?
I'm teasing that it's going to be me, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I'll be sitting on my couch.
Yeah.
Playing on my phone.
Okay.
Uh-huh, like 45 seconds of that. Give or take.
Okay.
And then the screen blacks out.
Yeah.
And then it says, Patrick Dean will be watching Avengers Doomsday.
On his phone.
In 2028. When he gets to it.
On his phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the way that the director intended.
I think the Russo brothers, they're like, how do we make this perfect for the Game Boy screen? Because that's what that's the ideal viewing experience that we want our viewers to have.
Avengers of Doomsday, available in monochrome in all formats.
Up to 16 pixels.
Mm-hmm.
Boy. All right. So let's get on with the story then. How about that?
Sure.
Do you want to hear a ghost story?
Yes. Woo, spooky time. Woo, spooky time. Woo, spooky time.
I think that's got to be the one from now on. It's
just
it's the best setup. Edward Lawrence Schieffelin was born in 1847 in the coal mining town of Wellsboro, Pennsylvania.
Sounds nice.
It is ideal. Idyllic is what they call that town. Edward's grandfather, I'll take a little bit of a historical tangent here. His grandfather was a man named Jacob Schieffelin Sr. He had fought for the British in the Revolutionary War.
Okay.
Now, he was in America. He was an American colonist.
Uh-huh.
But he was like, I don't think these farmers are going to do it. So I'm going to smart money's on the British Army for sure.
I really like tea. Like, I know you guys say you like tea. I really like tea.
I got so mad. I'm so sorry, but I got so mad when you threw it into the water. So mad. So he's fights for the British. He's actually the secretary for Henry Hamilton. Hamilton or something? I don't know. One of the British guys. And he's caught. He's captured during the war, and he's sent to jail as a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
But he eventually escapes that jail, and he goes to Canada.
Okay.
Where he was appointed a lieutenant in the Queen's Rangers.
Wow. Okay.
And the Queen's Rangers, as you probably guess, is another loyalist army. Mm-hmm. They're another people who want the crown. So this guy loves the British. But after the war, he just moves to New York like nothing happened.
There's no records in these days.
It's like, okay.
No idea who I am.
Yeah. He starts a drug company with his brother, and that company, called Schieffelin and Somerset, still exists today as a liquor import company.
Interesting. Isn't importing that something? Primarily from
Great Britain. It's
gotta be.
That's so strange.
Has to be.
All that swill coming over. Let's see. Anyway, so his grandson is the focus here, Edward. He was born in 1847, and when he was 2 years old, Edward travels to with his father and his older brother to California from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
They go by ship.
Okay, I'm gonna need some logistical information.
I don't know when the Panama Canal was built. It was not 1849.
It was after this. Yes, correct. Okay, so they take a ship.
So they go all the way down around the Cape in South America, and they go back up. It takes a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's fear of, like, ocean travel. That's, like, a legitimate phobia. Is there a fear of land travel that they're suffering from here?
It must be. I feel like we've had a story like this before. It's just so fucking crazy. Okay, guess how long it took them to go from, I assume, like, New York to California by ship. They leave in January.
Right.
Which week or month or year do you think they arrive?
I mean, leave in January. I've got to imagine they're there no earlier than May.
Oh. You got a speedboat? You got an outboard motor on that thing? They leave in January. They arrive in California in September.
Oh.
Oh, man. You could have a baby on that ship.
I mean, there's, like, oh, I hope there wasn't a baby on that ship. I mean, as cruises go, it's probably very lovely cruise. I bet they made a lot of stops.
They probably made some stops.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if the trinket industry is up and running by this point in the Caribbean.
How many people do you have on the beaches kind of selling little carvings and things?
Oh, I can take the people. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Unfortunately, I'm heading the wrong way for that. There will be a boat coming back the other way.
We'll come back. On the return trip, we'll grab a few of you and we'll come back. So they're on this boat for a long time. Now, Edward's dad, they get there in September. His dad hates California so much.
I mean, after this long on the boat, California would have to be land of milk and honey. For me to not be real mad about the whole last year.
Do you hate it so much that you're going to book a trip back in November? Because Edward's dad did.
On the boat?
Back on the boat.
Oh, no.
January to September. He gets there for 2 months. He's like, nope, absolutely not. Back on the boat, kids.
He's got
a two-year-old.
Has nobody made a map of the United States at this point? Do they think it's a trillion miles by overland or something?
I don't know. He's probably, I'm not going to take a two-year-old in a wagon. Are you crazy? Yeah. We're going on this ship for 10 months.
Oh,
man. So I don't know which part of California they landed in, but it was not the good part. Then in the mid-1850s, so a few years later, the family moves to the Oregon Territory.
Okay,
because they're tired of coal mining.
Did they take a boat up there too?
They must have. They simply must have. The problem was we didn't go far enough. We weren't on the boat long enough.
Is this actually like a family of orca? That am I not understanding what's going on here?
They're migrating. They're migrating to mate.
They're just following schools of fish is all they're doing really.
Yeah. So they go to the Oregon Territory. They want to raise cattle, grain, and children, is what the note said. So it is a mating path.
In no certain order there, but one of the three is a bit more fun than the others.
Cattle,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
They did maintain a bit of an interest in mining.
So okay.
They're still like, we'll dig around in the rock for a while.
There's not a lot to do between watching the wheat grow and ignoring your children.
No.
And birthing a cow.
Yeah. When he was 17, Edward sets out on his own as a prospector and a miner.
Nice.
He's getting into it. He travels from Oregon to Idaho to Nevada to Colorado to New Mexico. He's all over the place. He's going to find those good metals. In 1876, a man named David Lansing wrote this about Edward, quote, about the strangest specimen of human flesh I ever saw. Ooh. He was 6'2" tall and had black hair that hung several inches below his shoulder and a beard that had not been trimmed or combed for so long a time that it was a mass of unkempt knots and mats. He wore clothing pieced and patched from deerskins, corduroy, and flannel, and his hat was originally a slouch hat that had been pieced with rabbit skin until very little of the original felt remained.
Hmm.
Would you like to see a picture of our...
I was hoping Edward? A picture was going to follow that description because that was pretty horrifying.
Yeah, we got this here. There you go.
See, now in this, he looks more like a member of Creedence Clearwater Revival. It's extreme.
Give it about 100 years, and he's going to fit right in. It's going to be great. Yeah, not so bad. I think he cleaned up for this picture.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, that hair, you got a haircut for sure. All right, let's see. Where is it? So let's see. So in 1858, a man named... So Edward, he's doing his thing. A man named 1858. Nope. Man was not named 1858 in the That'd year.
Be a cool name, though. That's like the most hipster name.
That's an Elon Musk name right there. In 1858, a man named Frederick Brunkow.
German.
Doesn't matter. He's not going to be around much.
Yeah.
He found silver in Cochise County in Arizona.
Mm.
And so Frederick builds a cabin near the San Pedro River. He claims this area. Mm-hmm. He's gonna start mining it, of course. He hires three white men and about a dozen Mexican miners to help him work the mine.
Hmm. Makes sense.
In September of 1860, two of those white men were robbed and murdered in the cabin.
Oh, no. Now you're down to just one.
Not just one good one.
Yeah.
And then Frederick himself was found dead inside the mine with a rock drill sticking out of his torso.
Oh, tragic.
So the only white person left is this German cook.
Mm.
He blames the Mexicans. You'll be shocked to learn.
I don't know how to use the rock drill. I'm here to, I just boil potatoes.
Just, yep.
Morning,
didn't die of potato boiling, did he? Mm-hmm. No, he did not. Nope. So they had a falling out at that point.
Yeah, that'll do it.
There were also some ongoing conflicts with Native Americans there, of course. And so basically, the mines are not being mined right now.
Mm.
Most of the white people are dead except the cook.
They're laying fallow.
They're lying fallow.
Mm, it's your vocabulary word for the day, kids. Fallow.
So is that? Can you do that for mines? Is that just fields?
Okay, I'd have to look it up. It's probably still the vocabulary word of the day. Probably.
Even if it's used a little incorrectly, it's still pretty good. So the mines are just kind of hanging out there. No one's doing anything with them. So our boy Ed Scheiflin says, well, this to me sounds like opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who owned the cabin, he's gone. He's dead. He's got a rock drill through his gut.
Mm-hmm.
He's not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care what happens to that cabin.
The cook is useless.
Cook is useless.
I don't like potatoes at all.
Mexicans sound like a great time. Let's go. He decided to go in there and work the mines himself. And when he told a friend of this plan, that friend, his name was Al Sieber, says, quote, the only rock you will find out there will be your own tombstone.
Oh, why would I mine my own tombstone? That's stupid.
Idiot. Someone else will do that for me. I'll be dead.
If my tombstone is made of silver, which is what I'm going for here, I would be rich. So,
feeling stupid now, Al? So, Ed doesn't think so. He thinks this is probably pretty exciting. So he raises a small mining party and they head out to the silver mine where they're quickly attacked by Apaches.
Oh.
And at least one of Ed's men is killed.
Mm.
What's his name? I don't write his name down, but he's going to be important in a second. So just remember one of Ed's guys dies in that attack. But Ed doesn't leave. He's like, there's silver here. We're staying here. We're staying put.
Mm-hmm.
So they stay in the cabin. This cabin, over time, over the entirety of the what we consider the frontier days, that cabin itself is a site of 22 total murders.
Yeah.
So it's a hotbed.
Right. But, like, let's calibrate for frontier cabin numbers.
Yeah, and it's probably at least, like, 50 years.
Yeah.
It's not too bad.
That's less than one murder every other year.
Now, it's a small cabin.
Okay, yeah. So, there's
square footage.
The math does get complicated, but I still don't think it's an outlier. I really don't.
Okay. Well, Ed doesn't think so either. He doesn't leave. He's got a good thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
In 1877, he finds pieces of silver on a plateau called Goose Flats, not too far. A few months later, he finds the source of that silver, finally. It's this vein that he estimates is about 50 feet long and 12 inches wide.
Oh, okay. So
we've got a pretty serious silver ore vein going on here. So Ed gets very excited. Of course, he makes a formal claim on the mine. And the claim is near the gravesite of the man from his party who had been murdered by the Apaches earlier.
Right.
And so to honor that man, and to honor the fact that we're so close to his gravestone, on September 21st, 1877, Ed names his stake Tombstone.
Oh, that's very nice.
It's so sweet.
It is very nice.
So sweet. By March 1879, there were about 100 people living in Tombstone.
Hmm.
They were living all in tents and shacks, but they were all there, of course, to mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was getting a little crowded, so eventually a U.S. deputy mineral surveyor, hero of the show, named Solon M. Alice, arrives. And he lays out a new town that's large enough to hold enough people to fill a growing town. He's like, this is a mining camp. The U.S., I'm here on behalf of the U.S. We're saying this is actually a town now.
Oh, like we're going to have a street.
We're going to have boundaries.
A saloon.
Well, we'll talk about what's going to be in the town in a second.
Okay.
I don't just want to assume there's going to be a saloon.
I mean, I've seen Tombstone. I know eventually there's a saloon. That's where a lot of the action happens.
That's true. That's true. So he lays out the boundaries of this town, and of course, they name that town Tombstone.
Right. Yeah, no one wants to rename the town. That's the cool. They stumbled upon the coolest name ever for a town. We're not changing it.
Absolutely not. 2 years later, the town has four churches. Okay, 2 years. In 2 years, right?
Uh-huh.
It's got four churches, an ice house, a school, two banks, three newspapers, an ice cream parlor, and a bowling alley.
Wow. Holy cow.
It also had 14 gambling halls and 110 saloons.
All just sucking this one vein out of the ground. That's it.
It's an enormous number of saloons. And this was in addition to like the brothels. That doesn't count the brothels.
Oh,
there are a few different dance halls and theaters and brothels.
Okay.
One of those theaters that existed in Tombstone opened its doors on December 26th, 1881. And this was the Birdcage Theater.
Oh, sounds very tasteful.
I've got a couple pictures for you. Let me get those.
Yeah, take your time. I want to see these.
Bask in the birdcage. Let's see. Here it is as it stands today. So, spoiler alert, it's still there.
I mean, it's not as sexy as I was thinking it would be. Honestly,
but if you're 1881, oh my God, look at these arches. You know what those look like?
Oh, yeah. No, everything looks like that if it's 1881.
Three of them.
And you just crawled out of the desert, silver in your teeth.
But you got this nice horse trough right in front.
Mm-hmm. Oh, lovely. Yes.
Yeah. So as the bird gets you there, let's take a look on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is, of course, today.
Right. Yeah. It's a little rustic today. It looks like the inside of a train car has been shooken up a little bit.
Spaghetti strap tank top is, not period.
It looks like someone took an antique mall, shoved it inside of a train car, and shook it up for a few minutes. That's what it looks like to me.
We'll talk about why it looks like this later.
I do like the stage down at the end, though.
But here's a stage.
It's very tasteful. I like that.
Right? It's a great stage. I think this might be a pit here. You could have we have the orchestra down here.
Uh-huh. And then... Yes, I see the string section to the right, woodwinds to the left. I see how this works. Mm-hmm. Is that a timpani back there? Oh, I don't know how they fit that.
It's incredible. Well, they knew that you can go, if you go down far enough, you can go out as far as you want to go, and no one will say anything. So they fit a lot down there.
Actually where the term orchestra pit came from. It's hundreds of feet wide.
And you'd be down there, and you'd be playing the drum with one hand and then miming with the other hand. You're picking and drumming. And then you'll notice these like little rooms that are suspended from the ceiling here.
That's for sex.
That just mean?
Sex rooms.
Well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Entertaining rooms. Entertainment rooms.
Yes, thank you. So, yes, these are entertaining rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And these were, they call them cradles, which I find upsetting. Because, yes, they will eventually come to be prostitution rooms.
It's not up to you what I like. If I like to be rocked, I like to be rocked.
That's true. But this is why they call it the birdcage, because the women would sit up here like birds in cages and look out and, you know.
Right, and they'd sit on the rail and they'd show the people below.
And that's
how birdcages
work. Yeah, you've seen birds,
You put newspaper on the floor down there to catch it.
There are 14 of these cribs.
Oh, wow.
Seven on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Birdcage Theater.
Wow.
All right, so where are we here? Let's do this. We'll move you over here. Where are my notes? Here we go. So the theater, it was created by a man named Billy Hutchinson and his wife who helped him run it. Billy was a variety performer himself.
Mm-hmm.
Probably meant some blackface. Pretty sure he did some blackface minstrel stuff.
Okay. I mean, it's kind of an odd aside there. Sure. Okay. Yeah.
There's several people we'll talk about later who definitely did do blackface. So I see.
Okay. We need to prep the audience.
Yeah. Now, he had been impressed by the respectable family shows that he had seen in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he wanted to bring to Tombstone. Legitimately, he's like, it's a family theater.
Uh-huh.
So this is why when you ask if there's...
Right, if those are sex rooms.
If there's sex rooms.
Right.
I say to thee, no.
Right.
They were not built to be sex rooms. They were built just to be entertainer rooms where women would like do little dance things up there.
Sure.
Like, yeah.
Magic, maybe? Sleight of hand?
Sure. Whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Anything respectable.
Mm-hmm.
When they launched, they even had a ladies' night. Like they planned a regular ladies' night, which is one evening a week of entertainment that the respectable women of Tombstone could attend for free.
Okay.
Like the ladies of the town could come, like the refined the ladies.
Other six knights is the unrespectable ladies.
No, to come it's to that. All respectable. It's all respectable.
Okay, right. Okay.
It's meant to be a family theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. This is Billy Hutchinson's vision. Okay. Now, it doesn't take him very long to learn that that's not going to go over very well in Tombstone.
Financially. Right.
Correct.
Yes.
It's not what people are looking for.
This is the mistake that Vegas made back in the early 2000s, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to
Disney it up.
We're going to cover Fremont Street with that stupid video board, and we're going to have little characters walking around, and there's going to be babysitting in the, you know, casinos and whatever.
I like that one.
It was very convenient, honestly. I like the free cigarettes for the children. But
yeah.
Eventually that all petered out, and they're like, you know what? No, come to Vegas. You can fuck the sidewalk. I don't care. Do whatever you want.
You want to bring that Tommy gun back out? Knock yourself out. We don't care.
Please shoot it away from town if you can. If you can.
But if you can't,
yeah.
So yeah, Tombstone, if you know anything about Tombstone, you know it's not the kind of town that's going to support a family theater. So Billy realizes pretty quickly, he cancels Ladies' Night after, I think, the first one.
Oh, poor respectable ladies, I guess, of Tombstone, multiple.
I suppose, perhaps.
Probably just one. Probably just his wife.
I think so.
Just his wife.
Yeah. They begin offering, quote, baser entertainment for this this rough crowd of miners and outlaws.
Yes.
That's right. Audience first. So you might be wondering, what sort of entertainment would that be?
Magic, I assume.
We'll get there. First and foremost, yes, of course, there's prostitution, as mm-hmm. you already noted. Those little bird cages they put curtains up on those spots.
Okay.
So then you could wave men up, and then you go up there, you do your work.
Mm-hmm.
And they referred to the women who worked in the bird cages as, quote, soiled doves.
Just doves would have been fine.
No. Just so we know.
Yeah.
These ones are...
they're the doves. The doves. Oh, doves. Like they do like magic? No. Always with the magic. No, they're soiled doves. Oh.
Oh, so I can soil them? I don't know.
That's
negotiable, I guess.
Sure.
Talk to them.
Just no magic.
No.
That's all, please.
So, of course, the prostitution is going on there constantly. Mm. But there are other acts happening on the stage below. So, including Mademoiselle de Granville, who is also known as the woman with the iron jaw.
She became less popular upstairs than you might imagine.
She started off upstairs, but before long.
Yeah, complete center back down to the main stage, I'm afraid.
She performed feats of strength and specialized in picking up heavy objects with her teeth. That was pretty good.
At first, the appeal was just, hey, here's a woman in the 1800s with teeth. And then it was like, oh, hang on.
No, that's a horse. You dressed up a horse as a woman.
All right, fine.
No, she's a real woman. One regular act was the Irish comic duo Burns and Trayers. You probably have some of their albums.
I'll have to look, but yeah, I think so.
There was a comic singer. Her name was Irene Baker. She would stand up and do funny songs.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Stevens, really, of Tombstone. There's a serious opera singer named Carrie Del Mar,
mm-hmm.
who was sometimes, and a stand-up comedian named Nola Forrest.
Wow.
And if you've seen Tombstone, which I know you have,
mm-hmm.
they do cover a lot of it. And I think the theater that what's his name, Billy Zane and his friends go mm-hmm. and hang out in. I think that's modeled after the Birdcage. It might even be the Birdcage. But they did some opera. They did some, like, you know, frivolity and stuff. But there were some real whatever. Doesn't matter. They threw masquerade balls with cross-dressing entertainers. One of the most popular pieces of entertainment at the Birdcage was Cornish wrestling competitions.
Need some details. Yeah.
Cornish wrestling. What did I learn about this? Cornish wrestling, as far as I can tell, it's just sort of like wrestling.
Right.
It's just sort of like two guys are going to wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not like WWE. There's no kayfabe. It's just like, we're going to wrestle.
Right. Okay.
You're not going to punch. It's like, it's body wrestling.
Uh-huh.
It's the national sport of, not the national sport. It's the official sport of Cornwall.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Wherever that is in England.
Mm-hmm.
And these wrestling matches, these competitions, were so popular that often the results would get printed in newspapers in the United Kingdom, in England. Like these little wrestling matches in Tombstone, they would wire them over to the UK and they'd print them in the paper.
It's really incredible. I would imagine whenever the first Olympiad was held, they were deciding between Cornish wrestling and Greco-Roman, and they were like, Cornish wrestling just doesn't really have it.
I suppose. This one's full nude. Let's do that one.
Yeah.
I'll show you a picture. Here's a picture of two guys engaging in Cornish wrestling. Hard to tell who's winning.
Oh my God. That is some backyard wrestling shit right there.
Yeah. So it's like, it's serious stuff.
Okay.
It's like a grapple based wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Looks very judo-y.
Yeah.
It's very judo. Yeah.
I saw it mentioned somewhere as a Celtic martial art.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's how they're doing it in Tombstone, Arizona, but.
Yeah. I mean, both these guys are in basketball shorts, so I don't really know how this is going to work out for them.
You know, those collared shirts.
Yeah.
So,
both of those boys are as white as the sunrise. So
those are the real Cornish wrestlers. That's how you know. So that was a big deal. Cornish wrestling was awesome. They also indeed hosted stage magicians.
Oh, okay. Now we're getting somewhere.
Now they became a little less frequent after one magician boasted about being able to catch bullets with his teeth.
Oh no.
And he almost didn't make it off the stage alive when an audience member who was not part of the show shot him to see if he could do it.
Leave something to the Iron Jaw woman, please. She is built for this.
So that guy fortunately had terrible aim and did not blow this fucking guy's head off, but he did get severely injured.
Hmm.
But that's the kind of magic show they went to. The New York Times once called the Birdcage, quote, the wildest, wickedest night spot between Basin Street and the Barbary Coast.
Hmm.
And it will probably not surprise you to learn it was incredibly popular with the folks at Tombstone. Very popular. But Billy Hutchinson is a terrible businessman.
Okay.
So the theater opened in December of 1881, December 26, 1881, mm-hmm. day after Christmas, honor our Lord and Savior by,
mm-hmm.
you know, soiled doves, which is the fourth wise men brought soiled doves, right. But they don't always put that one in the Bible. So in December 1881, it opens. Now, here are some fun facts about Billy. I didn't have my... I shouldn't have said fun.
Just hit a button. It doesn't matter.
Sup, bitch?
Chair move, I'm sure.
Billy never paid his 1882 county tax bill for the Birdcage or his personal residence.
Oh, Billy.
He petitioned the city council to please... Will you lighten the tax bill in spring of 1882?
Mm-hmm.
They said no. He mortgaged the Birdcage just 3 months after opening, despite the fact he was generating literally tens of thousands of dollars in revenue.
Okay.
Over that time. He missed his own mortgage payment on his house and on the Birdcage. And he went several months without paying his home mortgage, and he failed to appear in court after doing so and was thrown in jail for a while.
Hmm.
He finally sells the Birdcage. And he's got two mortgages on it. He can't pay either of them. He finally sells the Birdcage after just about 1 year in the business.
Oh,
he was so broke that once he opted to spend 5 days in jail instead of paying a $5 fine, during which time he had to close down the Birdcage, mm-hmm. which was making a ton of money. So I don't know what the fuck was going on. Tens of thousands of dollars in the first 3 months, in that time's money.
He sounds like an ideas man. He's an ideas man. He needs someone to execute.
What happens if we warm ourselves by setting all this money on fire? I don't know. No one's done it. Let's see what happens. So he sells it. Now, the new owners do quite well for themselves because it's a big moneymaker. It's very popular.
Right.
Birdcage doesn't slow down one bit. One day, a poker game breaks out at the Birdcage.
Okay.
And this is like 1884, and you can always buy back in.
Mm-hmm.
So the game just sort of rolled along. Right, like people were they were losing all their money, and they would go get more money, and they'd come back, or they whatever. It's $1,000 buy-in.
Oh my God!
So you got to go get. It's a serious poker game.
Yeah,
serious players.
It's like $1 million nowadays.
Yeah, so, yeah, probably.
Easily.
Sure. Yeah, check your math, but it's a big deal. It attracts Wild West legends like Doc Holliday, Pat Masterson, and Diamond Jim Brady.
Ooh.
And they're just playing. And again, the game is just rolling because people are just buying in. Like random people are dropping by. Like, yeah, I'll play. And they'll play for several hours. So the game ends up being the longest poker game in history. Would you like to take a stab at how long this game lasted?
I'm going to say a week.
8 years, 5 months, and 3 days. 8.5 years this game is just going.
I get it. And nobody went all in at any point. Interesting.
Well, then people just buy back in. Like, I'll go on. And then other people are like, all right, I'm in. And they would just keep rolling, keep going. So 8.5 years. During the game, at least 10 men died at the table during this 8.5 year game.
Yeah.
They're either shot for cheating or killed in drunken brawls.
Hmm. Or just died of it being the
1800s. Or just consumption everywhere. Yeah. Now these chips are all red in our blood and everyone has consumption. The blood soaked so deep into the floorboards of the birdcage that even today you can still see it on really humid nights.
Ugh.
So gross. Yum. But all good things must come to an end. The game did, and also in the 1880s, the silver miners dug down deep enough that they hit water.
Oh.
So the mines start to flood.
Right.
Now, free water is great. Mm-hmm. And this is a desert.
Yeah.
This is a bonus. My managers, they order some Cornish engines to get the water out.
Oh, imagine trying to wrestle those things into place.
Do you remember what a Cornish engine is?
Is that the little buckets, right?
Yeah, buckets. Yep, little buckets. We've heard about them for moving men.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now it's going to move water.
Mm-hmm.
So they get some Cornish engines, yeah, down into those silver mines somehow. By mid-February of 1884, these engines are removing 576,000 gallons of water every 24 hours. So
is that bad for the environment at that point? This something seems wrong here.
I think you could use that water though, yeah. Right? They're like, it's, we have the Botanic Gardens of Tombstone, yeah, have never looked better. Also, I didn't put this in the notes, but I did read the largest rose bush in the world is in Tombstone. It was planted in like 1884.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it looks like a tree and it's huge and it's like the size of a building. It's crazy. It's great. Anyway, so water's coming out, which is good. It's fine. They don't care. So because the water's coming out so they can still mine. It's a little wet.
Right. Yeah.
People's lungs are not doing great down there.
This is not a time of great national health. So no. This is not a big deal.
Yeah. So they're getting more silver, which is great. They keep on mining for years after that. But this is obviously a lot of water. Like they've tapped into like the Colorado River or some shit.
Right. Yeah.
It's just a lot of water. And on May 26 of 1886, the Grand Central Hoist and Pumping Plant catches fire and burns to the ground.
Oh, no.
And the flames were so hot that the steel on the Cornish engines twisted and warped.
Mm.
So they're out of there. It's gone. It's done. Everything's done. From there, it's a pretty quick decline. The mines flood. And just like that, the heyday of Tombstone is over.
Wow.
And with it, the Birdcage Theater. The owners just shut the doors and left.
Yeah.
So the reason why it looks so crummy inside today, they didn't clear everything out. They didn't move anything out. They literally shut the doors, locked them, and left. And it sat like that for almost 100 years before someone was like, oh, I wonder what's in this building. And they walked in, and there are beer bottles, like half-empty beer bottles still on the tables. There were poker chips everywhere, and like all that shit was still in there. Like the drapes, you know, these like dusty, like ratty, falling apart drapes are still in the cribs. They're everywhere. So it's just hanging out there. Now, Tombstone, of course, is a pretty wild place. Since the Birdcage has been kind of revitalized, one of the things they had to do was count how many bullet holes are in the walls.
What, for like tax purposes?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's important. And there are 140 bullet holes identifiable in the walls of the Birdcage.
Okay.
The Birdcage, yeah. And a lot of the ghosts to go with those bullet holes. Including Margarita, who was known as the Lady in White. She was a prostitute who was murdered by a jealous client in crib number 2.
Oh.
While she was with another man.
That's a shame.
Today, Margarita can be heard singing her sad Spanish songs from from her cage up in the second crib.
Oh, La Llorona. Oh.
Yeah. Visitors from, yeah. And we might do La Llorona someday, so I'm going to reserve commentary on that for a second. Visitors report feeling her tears drip on them from above. That might be something else.
Oh, man.
Checked out. I don't know. That's gross. Male visitors sometimes feel invisible hands caressing their faces while hearing her whisper prices in Spanish. Tijuana all over again.
Oh, someone has unfinished business, like literal business to finish. Yeah.
Then there's Harry, the stagehand. He was killed in 1882 during a performance when a sandbag fell on his head.
Oh.
Which, bad for him, but launched a whole comedy trope.
Yeah.
Which is great. Harry fell so the Muppets could run. Mm-hmm. You know? Harry turns the lights on and off. He opens and closes the curtains. Props sometimes will move all on their own when he's there. He sometimes even appears as a solid apparition in work clothes.
Hmm.
The 10 poker players who were murdered at the poker table never left. Visitors hear chips clicking, cards shuffling, and men arguing over poker hands. Cold spots mark where each of the men died.
Hmm.
And some visitors report that they feel an overwhelming compulsion to sit in the empty chairs, and that when they do, they experience lifelike visions of the Old West.
Oh. Okay. I mean, you look around the building and you get a pretty lifelike vision of the Old West, but that's fine.
Yeah. One guy just sat down, he turned around, and Kurt Russell just happened to be on the same tour. And he was like, oh my God, it's Wyatt Earp. The 14 cribs are all haunted. Mm-hmm. It's common to smell perfume and cigar smoke when you're hanging out up there. There's also a basement where people claim to see blood pooling on the floor, and then it'll like pool and pool and pool and disappear completely.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Birdcage Theater's angriest spirit. This is, the research tells me that her name is Black Moriah, a prostitute who practiced voodoo.
Oh.
Research's words, not mine.
Mm.
And she was apparently murdered by a client who was afraid that she had hexed him.
Oh.
And she now appears as a malevolent spirit who attacks men who disrespect women in the building.
Mm-hmm.
So a bit of an avenging angel story happening here. She's been known to scratch, push, and even temporarily possess visitors. And that is the story of the Birdcage Theater in Tombstone, Arizona.
Wow. Gotta go.
Still there? You can go there today. We should do a live show at the Birdcage Theater in
Tombstone. Absolutely should. Is the bowling alley in town still open? If it is.
I think so.
Twofer.
There's got to be a Tombstone bowling alley. If they were smart. Stone Bowling Alley. No, but so there isn't a well, what AI is telling me is while there isn't a famous Tombstone Bowling Alley, the prominent local spot in your area is Stanton Lanes.
Super helpful.
That's not very helpful.
Boy, I'm looking at the Tombstone, Arizona satellite view, and it is a little bleak.
I think it's pretty desolate there. I don't think there's a lot happening there. I don't think a lot of commerce came back to Tombstone other than tourism.
This is mostly graveyards. Ooh, but there is a Baymont by Wyndham here. Very nice. Very, very
isn't it
nice.
Like there's like a weird hotel right like really close to the OK Corral, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Is it you could like see it from your window? So that story of the Birdcage, which I would love to go check out. I don't know. Well, Ryan has not yet found a way for us to make these trips and make it make money for us. We'll work on it, though. There are, of course, many, many, many other ghosts in Tombstone, and hopefully we'll come back to the rest of them someday. But that is the Birdcage Theater.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And a fun history of Tombstone. Best named town in America, I think. Well, that's going to do it for our inaugural 2026 episode of Is This a Ghost? Pretty good. Pretty good.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes you want to go watch Tombstone. That movie fucking slaps. That's so good. I bet it holds up too. That's so great. All the notes this week were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor and website master is Jen Swanson. Our social media team consists of Sam Murdoch and Jen Jones and Fox and Quill Studios out there working on our merch. Thank you to all of them for doing everything they do for us, for very little appreciation from Patrick and for little money for all of us. And that's it for us this week. And if you like this show, there's more where that came from. You can join Ghost Plus for $5.99 a month, which is like no money at all. You can get even more ghost stories. You can get The Smith Show, which is another fun show that we do only on Ghost Plus. And it helps us out because we don't make much money here. We would like to. We would love that. Tell your friends, tell your family. In the meantime, don't have sex in suspended cribs, because that's gonna land you on the next week's episode of Is This a Ghost?